The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show, brought to you by Old Mutual. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. We'll talk to the convener of the big report into the state of the nation, really. I mean, they're billing it extraordinarily as a silent coup rather than the more sort of the more palatable state capture or state of capture. But we'll talk about that this evening. I know you've heard a lot about it today, but I really want to wrap it up and really get to an understanding of some of the deeper issues in it. The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. We'll take you through the currency on the day. Very, very strong indeed. One wonders just how much of that has got to do with the hype. And it may be hype around the future of President Jacob Zuma as he arrives at the National Executive Committee meeting. Mail and Guardian today had a huge headline that the balance of power within the NEC has tipped against President Jacob Zuma. Will anybody dare to stand up at the NEC, as Derek Hanekom, former tourism minister, did in December, to say, I think we should talk about this. I wonder if anybody will do it this time around. There's speculation it'll happen. But I kind of feel like we've seen this movie before. We've got Gary McNamara, as our market commentator this evening from Sunderland Private Wealth. We'll play catch up with the best bits of The Money Show and the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening with 2,000 Rand up for grabs.
702 The Money Show. Call Bruce on 011-883-0702.
Will President Jacob Zuma be president on Monday morning? Is it all wishful thinking on in terms of some members of the National Executive Committee of the ANC gathering in Pretoria or Midrand this evening for the committee meeting? And how much of it is grounded in reality? Well, it's impossible to tell at this stage. What is possible, however, is to sit down and read, as I have today, huge swathes of the massive research project undertaken by a group of academics from a range of public institutions into what we know as state capture. Bottom line, we're living in an increasingly mafia-style state. A handful of connected individuals riding roughshod over the dreams and aspirations of a country in the interests of serving their own inflated bank balances. Professor Mark Swilling is convener of the report. He's head of the Centre for Complex Systems in Transition at Stellenbosch University. I'm sure you've been asked these questions many times today, Mark Swilling, but I'm keen to get to the base of it. And you talk about state capture as a silent coup. That's strong. It's emotive language. But that does seem to be where all of the evidence is pointing towards a small group of people who have succeeded in not only capturing the state, but taking over the national checkbook as well.
Yeah, that's right. We call it the Zuma-centered power elite, which has effectively seized control of the most significant state institutions and can determine the way in which state resources are now utilized. And it's on those grounds that we argue that it is the equivalent of a silent coup, which has displaced the ANC from its historic role as the primary force for transformation in society.
I mean, the ultimate prize you describe as National Treasury, its oversight of FICA, Financial Intelligence Center, which gives oversight of money laundering, financial affairs of politically connected individuals. We know the president wasn't at all keen on signing the FICA bill into law. Eventually, his hand was forced on that particular one. The question is whether or not it's checkmate now, whether or not Jacob Zuma finally does have the National Treasury in his hands, and by implication, the Financial Intelligence Center as well, in which case it's game on in terms of the future of South Africa.
Yeah, well, I mean, the big discussion is whether the reappointment of Brian Malefe is an overplay of a hand.
Yep.
And it wasn't that surprising for those of us who were doing this work. Because at the center of our political crisis is the nuclear deal. And as we suggest in the report, there are some who are alleging that the Russians funded the local government election, and it's payback time. And the payback is the signing of the nuclear deal. And for that to happen, you need a minister who's going to sign the guarantee for that deal. And it also explains why Russian intelligence is reputed to have a presence in the presidency, overseeing the process of making sure the nuclear deal happens. So, you know, that would have major, major economic implications for the future of the country.
The nuclear deal, or the refusal of officials to do the nuclear deal, has cost two finance ministers their job in the last 15 months. It's cost senior officials in the National Treasury their jobs. Malusi Gigaba is the new finance minister. He's been put into that job in the last 2 months. He doesn't come out of your report very well at all.
Yeah, that's because he has a lot to account for when he was the Minister of Public Enterprises. He was appointed to that position in November 2010 and went about in a very aggressive way the restructuring of boards of key SOEs like Eskom, Transnet and South African Airways and others. And many of those companies that were in many ways global leaders of what a state-owned company could really be before that are now in disarray, over-indebted, badly governed, facing all sorts of court cases and investigations, and are an embarrassment. And he needs to account for why he selected the individuals he did to be on the boards of these companies.
And hopefully will be called to account for that. I mean, now he's sitting in the National Treasury. The assumption one makes is that this is the end game. This is the big goal. The question is, here's Malusi Gigaba, who on day one in the National Treasury was spouting forth lots of rhetoric, and since then has pulled back and has been behaving with a high level of dignity and with a high level of restraint relative to what might have been anticipated by him. What is your assessment? Do you make an assessment on his role as finance minister?
We don't make an assessment specifically on your question, but if I may kind of venture a bit beyond the report,
sure,
and say, listen, let's face facts. He wasn't supposed to be the Minister of Finance. That job was for Brian Molefe, which is why Brian Molefe got snapped into Parliament and expected and told, was already starting to select his team to be Minister of Finance. That's what he expected to happen. And it didn't happen. And that's basically because the top six said, listen, we don't agree with this reshuffle, but if you really want to add salt to the wound, make it Brian Molefe. And so the compromise was Gigaba. Now, Gigaba is a much more interesting character because he would like to be president.
Yeah.
And he has actually got the capability to be president and the presence. And so he faces a choice. He can sign the nuclear deal and go down as the man who destroyed the South African economy and therefore not to be president.
Mm-hmm.
Or he can go against his bosses and say, no, I'm not going to sign this because, look, Fitch says it's a disaster. The ratings agency says it's a disaster. World Bank says it's a disaster. The leading bankers in the world are telling him it's a disaster. And maybe he actually finds some backbone and says, no, I'm not going to sign this. And that might make him president.
And it could put him on the right side, back on the right side of history in this particular case. I agree with so many of your assessments in this report, but one I agree with perhaps more than most others is that too many people reduce President Jacob Zuma to a caricature. They see as a bit of a bumbling oaf, as a bit of a giggling twit in Parliament from time to time, and he's very easy to underestimate. They dismiss the extraordinary network that he's developed, the huge support, the structures that he's developed over the last decade or so. He's put all of these people in place. There's a huge amount of financial support for the individuals who back him. And they've got a lot to lose if he goes. We go to a National Executive Committee meeting this weekend. Lots of hype as to whether or not the president will be president on Monday morning. What's your assessment based on the research that you have done as to the likelihood of him being removed this weekend?
I mean, this is now we're in the
it's speculation
of a kind of speculation and betting game. So if I had to place a bet, I would say he will be president on Monday morning. I think the Mail and Guardian headline is correct. The needle is shifting away, and it was pretty much split 50-50, and nobody really knew exactly who was on what side. But there is a sense of a shift that's not in his favor. But I suspect what will happen is that those who can exercise power to remove him would rather probably do a deal on how to manage the transition in their favor, so that the result in December is more favorable rather than a kind of scorched earth all-out battle now. I think the real battle this weekend, and by the way, the NEC was shortened. It was supposed to be 3 days. It's only like one day.
Okay.
The real issue is going to be the vote of no confidence in Parliament. And the interesting thing to watch will be whether they decide to actually debate it and to reach an agreement, or whether they say, listen, we'll never reach agreement, so let's leave the members of Parliament to come to their own conclusions.
We live in fascinating times. Professor Mark Swilling, thank you and congratulations on a fascinating piece of research by a group of academics from multiple academic institutions. They really have done some very interesting work. And Professor Mark Swilling is of the Center for Complex Systems in Transition at Stellenbosch University, part of a group of academics who, under the banner of Public Affairs Research Institute, carried out this particular investigation. It's absolutely fascinating. And their level of research, the depth of that research, and their assessment of it, President Jacob Zuma, incredibly powerful, incredibly highly placed friends, and he's fighting for his political life. And when in a corner, President Jacob Zuma is a very effective fighter.
The Money Show.
The markets.
Gary McNamara from Sunlum Private Wealth. What an interesting week it has been for markets, was particularly when one looks at currency markets. There really have been, how do I put this politely, counterintuitive. They've taken us all by surprise.
They have been. Certainly the strength in the rand, particularly against the pound. The dollar's obviously been a little bit stronger over the week, and really quite strong today. They had a GDP number that was revised. If you remember, the first quarter was quite sluggish relative to expectations, and they've upgraded that to 1.2% growth, where they predicted earlier 0.9% growth. So it's still quite slow, but I think the market took that as quite a good sign. They're expecting better growth there in the second and third quarter, so that leads to a stronger dollar, weaker pound, and they've also got election issues coming up, but that translated into a much stronger rand from that point of view. I think there's also a little bit of hope, I guess, that there will be some sort of resolution out of the NEC, although I'm not buying it.
No, nor am I, and there is a real concern. I mean, we had a call from Tito Mboweni just before the show started earlier this week, and he was saying, just be careful. There's a narrative doing the rounds that this is make-or-break weekend for President Jacob Zuma, and the currency market's got to be careful that if it doesn't happen the way that speculators suspect, that we could see a very, very sharp sell-off in that currency as early as next week. I mean, moving to 16.40 to the pound, 14.38 to the euro, 12.86 to the dollar. Sure, they're outside factors, but there's a big punt being put on the removal of the president, which may or may not happen.
No, absolutely. So it's an interesting one from that point of view. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we do. We watch it very, very closely. When the currency strengthens the way it does have a big impact on the JSE. Also, when commodity prices move, and we've seen big moves today, the oil price was down by about $5, a huge decline in the value of the oil price.
Absolutely. Well, OPEC announced that they're going to continue to implement those production cuts that they agreed to a month or so ago until March 2018. The market was probably looking for a little bit more, so that led to a little bit of a weaker oil price. Broader commodities a little bit weaker on the day, but you also, so as you say, those factors have been affected by the rand, so broader weakness in underlying commodity shares as well. Surprisingly, the banks didn't actually rally as much as I would have thought on the stronger currency, so they're certainly not buying the story at this stage. Interestingly enough, Bruce, the food producers were doing a little bit better today, and we had quite nice crop estimates out this afternoon.
But the very best maize crop in recorded history, more than 16 million tons of maize expected to be harvested this year. I mean, go back to January before Cyclone Dineo, and we were in desperate, dire straits, and suddenly we're in for a record crop. It's crazy.
Absolutely, and it's going to be a million tons more on the forecast anyway than the previous biggest one, which was 1981. So big export opportunities, so we'll wait and see. But that's certainly going to be positive for our inflation data that we saw out earlier this week. And the food producers, they've really battled with the drought, so inputs for them will be a little bit better. And I guess they'll pass some of it on to the consumer, but like all corporates, they will pick up a bit of margin on that side.
And that's why we saw that nice recovery in retailers today. I mean, ShopRite up 2.5%, Massmart up 4%, even Cashbuild having a nice little bounce on the day. But the inflation story scares me just a little bit, Gary, and just educate me here, please, because yesterday's inflation number at 5.3%, much better than expected. It came about as a result of the fact that the currency is pretty much where it was when Pravin Gordhan got fired. The South Africa's current account is still in fine shape. We've not seen a downgrade of our domestic debt. That's still, we're watching and waiting on that particular front. All things are pointing to continued improvements in the inflation outlook. And we could see interest rates coming down, but there's just the politics of the country and the politics of the moment just clouds that perspective too much for me.
Absolutely, Bruce. And I think, you know, when they had the meeting, the MPC meeting, there was actually one governor that talked about cutting interest rates. And I think they potentially would have been in a position with the weak consumer in South Africa to cut interest rates if we had more certainty on the ratings, which combines with the political outlook. And all these things are actually taking the opportunity from a South African point of view away, because we actually, with the weaker consumer, need to be cutting interest rates here because the consumer is under pressure. And they can't do that because, as you say, the risk with the rating agencies and the political uncertainty with the rand being the main casualty if it comes through.
Yeah, well, the rand has been very strong. Commodity prices have been strong. They helped lift gold shares on the day. But commodity prices like iron ore, for example, are taking strain. There was a downgrade of China this week, still very much investment grade. It's got far fewer problems from an investment ratings perspective than we do. But the pressure on China is coming through, and that's being brought to bear from our perspective on things like the iron ore price, which is taking strain.
Yeah, I think the iron ore price also moved a little bit too quickly in our view ahead of itself. You know, a year ago it was trading at $30 a ton. It went up to just short of 90. It might have even gone through $90 a ton. You know, commodities tend to overshoot on the upside and then they do it a little bit more on the downside. I think probably $50 to $60 closer to where we're trading now is probably a fairer price when you look at the producers and what they need to earn to keep the manufacturing up. China's also got a couple of issues in terms of their currency, which also take a little bit of issues away from there. But the iron ore price, I think, was overdone, probably reflecting fairer values at this stage from that side.
I mean, are you seeing the JSE much further ahead than it is now by the end of this year? I can't believe we're very nearly in June, which means we're nearly halfway through the year. My goodness me. I mean, when you look at it like that, you realize how fast time is flying. And I'm beginning to sound like my dad. But the year is flying by. The market is at elevated levels. Does it get much better than this?
Yeah, the international markets have had a very good run. MSCI is up about 9% year to date in dollar terms. But the South African market, you've got to divide into the South African GDP type of stocks, which represent about 30% of the market, and those that benefit from a weaker rand, which are about 70%. And at the moment, people seem to be favoring the rand hedge or the ones that benefit from a weaker rand. But with the rand doing what it's doing at the moment, that's keeping those shares under wraps at the moment, particularly against the pound, where a lot of them are dual listed on that exchange. So a lot of where the market's going to end up at the end of this year is going to depend on the currency and how the South African economy pans out, which at this stage looks a little bit uncertain.
Almost certainly does. Gary McNamara, thank you for coming in. Nice to see you once again. Gary McNamara is with Sanlam Private Wealth. The currency on the day, we saw the pound weaken on the day, about 2% weaker against the rand. 16.41 this evening, the euro 14.38, the dollar 12.86. Just so much speculation, and it's all sort of politically motivated stuff. There's no fundamental economics that's justifying what's going on in markets at the moment. It is a little bit concerning. It's a little bit unsettling, but that's why Eyewitness News is all over the National Executive Committee of the ANC, keeping a very, very close eye on it. No doubt there'll be plenty of people leaking information out of that NEC, trying to manipulate public perception as to what's really going on, but we will have to just sit, watch the space, and see whether or not there is going to be yet another compromise to keep President Jacob Zuma in the job until December so that he can have a dignified stepping down as the president of the ANC. Frankly, that seems more likely than any other scenario. But look, these things are volatile. People are people, and let's see whether or not people can keep their tempers this weekend at the National Executive Committee of the ANC.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. On the next Money Show, I've got Mr. Wine, Michael Fridgen, international wine expert at Wine Wizard, and I'll Make Money Mondays feature. Has he got any bad habits? I mean, wine's a great habit. I wonder just how bad that habit is in his household, though. Can't wait to talk to him about that. Plus, also, tune in for Jay Naidoo on his book, Change, Organizing Tomorrow Today. Jay Naidoo, an activist, former government minister. Can't wait to catch up with those guys on the next Money Show.
Money Show. Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
Should I share a brutal biz quiz question? No, I don't think so. We'll bring you catch up with the best bits in just a little bit, and we'll play the brutal biz quiz. 2,000 Rand up for grabs.
The Money Show on your number one news and talk station.
Let's play catch up with the best bits of The Money Show. Even if you missed the best bits, I want to play you some of those now. And if you want more, you can go to wherever you get your podcast. You can download our podcast, The Money Show podcast. It's there for nothing. A little bit of data. Do it on the work network. You'll be fine. They won't mind. Say it's work advancement. I'm studying. It's part of, and I'm sure you can get a certificate for it at work. Just ask them for a certificate. But now there's a bitter, and unfortunate and tragic and potentially damaging split in business. The Black Business Council and Business Unity South Africa announcing a schism this week and an end to a 23-year partnership. There've been rising tensions, which came to a head when a delegation of Black Business Council delegates was booted out of a NEDLAC meeting by a Business Unity South Africa delegation. Exactly what went wrong at that meeting is known only by the people who were at that meeting. But earlier this week, I asked George Sebulela, the Black Business Council Secretary General, whether he thinks his organization has still got what it takes to earn a seat at NEDLAC.
We believe we are entitled to have a seat, and I would be very shocked that we can still say NEDLAC is a greater platform to represent key stakeholders in the South African public if Black business is not represented.
George Sebulela, he is the Black Business Council Secretary General. Well, listening to that was the president of BUSA, Business Unity South Africa, Jabu Mabuza. And he says his organization will no longer represent the Black Business Council. It all sounds like it got just a bit messy.
We are not NEDLAC. And NEDLAC must decide whether it wants BBC to join NEDLAC. But for now, they are not going to be going to NEDLAC through the BUSA seats.
Okay, but I mean, again, what George Sebulela was telling us is that he believes that they represent a constituency and they will still be included in NEDLAC. I mean, this is clearly highly political. It's highly charged. You sound disappointed, and George Sebulela sounds disappointed. But just to clarify, absolutely, this has been teed up today. My reading of it was that this was the Black Business Council decision to terminate its relationship with Business Unity South Africa. You have inferred that you kicked them out. Which way did it work?
Bruce, as I said, I led a team of BUSA delegates to meet their president, their chairman, and their secretary, George himself. And I presented to them that, guys, the last 2 years we've tried to find agreement on how we can work. For the last 18 months, there's been a framework agreement that we have not signed. And you continue to do things that are not in line. And the two recent developments, as I said, the screaming match outside NEDLAC when the former Minister of Finance presented budget to NEDLAC, where Jimmy Manye, representing them, went on to say BUSA and PPC are poles apart. And this issue about the downgrade and some of the utterances they made are just not ones that we as business would want to be associated with.
Well, that's the core reason of the split between the two. Well, listening to that was the former Business Unity South Africa Chief Executive, Jerry Vilakazi. He gave us a call, and you can hear he's disappointed that it's come to this.
I think it's very important. We have a history of being able to walk away from the table in South Africa, but come back and find a solution. I think ultimately it is very important that both BBC and BUSA engage on the issues and find each other.
I wonder if it's not gone too far for that. Yeah, but that was one of the big stories this week. The big split in business representation. The Black Business Council and Business Unity South Africa no longer besties after 22 years of working together. Well, you and me, we invented a new term this week, and I'm very proud of us. I think we did well because we decided we needed a term. So many CEOs leaving corporate life, going into semi-retirement, taking maternity leave or whatever it is that they're doing, and then they come back. And I was mentioning various people. I was mentioning Brian Joffe, who had been running Bidvest, and then Bidvest split into Bidvest and Bidcore, and he was on both boards, and then he stepped down as chairman of Bidcore, I think it was. And now he's got a brand new business, and he just can't resist the C-suite. And, of course, he hired Kevin Hedewick, former chief executive of Famous Brands, and he's going to be the chief operating officer of Long for Life. And there have been a number of other examples. Mark Lamberti, of course, the former chief executive and then chairman of Massmart. Mark Lamberti also was chief executive of Transaction Capital. And then he made a comeback, almost a boomerang-style comeback. Many of you used that term to lead another listed company in the form of Imperial. Well, this week it was the turn of Grant Patterson, the Massmart former chief executive, who accepted the challenge to head up troubled Edcon, the parent company of Edgar's, CNA, and Jet. What is the term, I asked you, for a chief executive who just can't stay out of head office and desperately wants to make a comeback? We decided it was called a mulefe or mulefe-ing. You make a departure, you announce that you're leaving, then you can't resist it and you come straight back. So it's doing a Brian or doing a Molefe is an executive who just can't stay away from the C-suite. Have a listen to Grant Patterson, who's making that comeback, age 45 or so, at the helm of a brand new company, well, brand new to him, that is, and that is struggling Edcon.
I started looking around this year. I was getting a bit bored, and really there were two jobs available, CEO of Eskom and the CEO of Edcon.
No, you're mistaken. The CEO of Eskom job's not been available. You may have thought it was available, but it's not available. I mean, you're an electrical engineer. It's a job that you could have done, but this one was available, so you took it. Recently, we've seen Brian Joffe launch a brand new listed company, being joined by the former Famous Brands chief executive, Kevin Hedewick. We've seen Brian Molefe go back to Eskom. You are launching a brand new business career in your close to mid-40s. What motivates you to make that choice? What is that sense of boredom? I mean, many people would kill for the opportunity to be retired comfortably at 45 and choose a couple of projects. What makes you want to get back into the thick of it?
Well, you know, the grass is always greener. So I would imagine any chief executive you spoke to is in the middle of managing this particularly hard environment, dreams of a sabbatical or a retirement. When you're in that world, it's very nice. I've had a great 3 years, and this is perhaps getting back into the rat race a little bit earlier than I thought. But the reality is you do get bored after a while.
And he was bored, so now he's going to be working at Edcon for the next 6 months, ready to take the big job in February next year. Make Money Mondays, it is our feature on a Monday night at 7:30, where we ask a well-known South African to tell us their money stories, what informed them about money, what taught them about money, when they first got pocket money, what they did with that pocket money, how they waste money, how they save money, how they invest money. And this week it was the turn of a disciplined money nerd. I try to poke and prod and try to find a way through the armor of Ruda Lantman. Those of you who remember from her car plant days know she's tough as nails. She wasn't blinking. She wasn't giving ground at all. Ruda Lantman on Make Money Mondays.
My husband always says that his dad was big on saving money until he went past the butcher and walked in for biltong. Now, we're a bit like that until we go to the our favorite steakhouse and order the best bottle of wine. And we just say, ugh, you know, why shouldn't we have the really best one?
That sounds like a very worthwhile habit, frankly.
No, we spend lots of money in restaurants and so forth. But it's, other people put up cricket stumps and start hitting a ball. We sit down and talk. It's what we do. So one needs to lubricate that.
No, of course. Of course. And you've got to lubricate it expensively. I mean, do you do things like wine collections at home and all of that sort of stuff? Do you collect stuff?
Not to a very great extent, because one of the other things that we've done over our... we've been married for 40 years this year, and we've lived in the same house in Melville for 34.
Wow.
And yes, it is a bit wow.
No, it's fantastic. You haven't had to pay transfer duties for 34 years. That's good financial planning.
But, you know, it's part of that was also that we never fell for the... what's a versuching? I'm thinking in Afrikaans now. The temptation of buying the big house. When our son was kind of late primary school and boys want to kick balls, when the friends came to us, they had to kick the ball in the street. And there was a temptation, but we stayed put. And that has, of course, over the years saved us literally millions.
It's a fantastic, fantastic money lesson. And it's one that Rudolf Huerta, the economist, the independent economist, the son of Rudolf and the father of Rudolf. You know Rudolf? Rudolf Huerta, the economist? His big money lesson is when people get married or they move in together for the first time, to go and buy the most expensive house they possibly can afford, to stretch at that point of their life to buy the best asset they probably can, and then stick with that asset and improve that asset, and don't hop, as so many of us have fallen prey to do. We start small and then you upgrade. And then you upgrade a bit. And every time you're paying massive transfer duties along the way, you're paying massive fees to estate agents, and you're losing a lot of money. Warren Ingram, in his book, How to Make Your First Million, has got a great chapter on what it takes to make money out of property. And house hopping certainly isn't a way of doing it. Rudi Landman's experience, 34 years at the same house, and just gradually... Yeah, improving the house and loving the home that you're in, the one that you get really early on in your life, is a really good financial strategy.
It's time to put your business knowledge to the test. The Biz Quiz with MTN on The Money Show.
Who is up first this evening? Oh, I see. It's Valentine. Hello. There's Valentine. Valentine, which ratings agency downgraded China this week?
It's Moody's, Bruce.
It's Moody's Bruce. It is Moody's Bruce, Valentine. Did they do the right thing, Valentine? Was it the right call to make?
Sorry?
Was it the right call for them to make, Valentine?
I think it was the right call
for them. Well, we see, that's 2 points. Okay, well done, Valentine. Now, listen, what is the name? This is far trickier, by the way. What is the name of the company that will be run by a dream team of Brian Joffe and the man who joined him this week, Kevin Hedewick? This is the question that will separate the wheat from the chaff tonight. What is the name of the company?
It's called Long for Life.
You're a disappointment, Valentine. I wanted more of a contest this evening, but well done. Very good. Long for Life. It's a weird name, but yes, a new investment company launched by Bidvest and Bidcore founder Brian Joffe, listed on the JSE's main board in April this year, and Kevin Hedewick joining Brian Joffe, and we'll see what they do. Monday, 7 years ago, so this coming Monday, 7 years ago, was the very first purchase ever with Bitcoin. What did the programmer Laszlo Hayens buy? Laszlo Hayens bought something that Kevin Hedewick used to sell when he was chief executive of famous brands, but he bought two of these things for Bitcoin. It became the very first ever Bitcoin transaction. What did Laszlo Hayens buy?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I know.
I've given you a clue. Come on. I mean, you know it's fast food. Okay, so he bought two items of fast food. What would it be, Valentine?
A burger and a Coke?
I'm afraid not, Valentine. Sorry about that. Thank you, Valentine, very much for playing. It's a brutal Biz Quiz this evening. On Monday, 7 years ago, was the very first purchase ever with Bitcoin, and it was done by a programmer called Laszlo Hayens. He bought two particular food items, fast food items. What were those fast food items? Give us a call on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
Yeah, it is brutal this evening. Most certainly is. Monday, 7 years ago, first ever purchase in Bitcoin was Tsepo.
Burger and chips?
Not a burger and chips, I'm afraid, but you're on the right track. Rodra.
Roger, yeah.
Oh, Roger. Hello, Roger. I've got Rodra written on my... So, Rodra, what did Laszlo buy with the first Bitcoins?
Pizza.
How many?
I think it was two.
And how many Bitcoin did he spend on two pizza?
Oh,
Now you got me.
10,000 Bitcoin. He spent 10,000 Bitcoin, and which goes to show, and those 10,000 Bitcoin, which hit the value of about $2,000 each this week, would be worth considerably more. The most expensive pizza ever bought, I suspect, in retrospect anyway. Of which mass retailer was Grant Patterson chief executive for 7 years before he retired at the age of 42?
You have to repeat that.
Grant Patterson was chief executive of which company for 7 years?
Oh.
Three, two, one. Oh, Roger, you're going to kick yourself.
Yeah.
You knew the Bitcoin question. You knew the Bitcoin question. Roger, so disappointing. I need another player. Levuko. Can I have a Levuko? Cecile, can I have Levuko? Levuko. Okay, help me out, yeah. Which retailer did Grant Patterson run?
It was Massmart.
It was Massmart. Absolutely right. He's not going to join Edcon. Now, who joined the Carte Blanche team along with fellow presenter Derek Watts, the 21st of August, 1998? Who was his co-presenter?
Rudy Lachman.
Who?
Rudy Lachman.
Is that Ruda's brother, Rudy? Was he the first? And then Rudy gave it up, and then he said to Ruda, listen, people are laughing at my name.
Ruda.
Oh, sure it was Ruda. It was Ruda Lachman. Right. And then, final one, and here's the most vicious. There is a report, the State Capacity Research Project, a report on state capture. They've got the project is Betrayal of the Promise, How South Africa is Being...
Yeah.
I need a word. Betrayal of the Promise, How South Africa is Being...
Stolen.
Was that a guess?
Yes.
Was it a natural instinct? Because you just feel it every single day. Look, you're absolutely right. Well done. How South Africa is Being Stolen. I think it was a bit of a guess. It's a complicated title for a report, but the State Capacity Research Project on State Capture, a group of academics got together and they came up with the report, Betrayal of the Promise, How South Africa is Being Stolen. And their assessment is that South Africa's got the shadow mafia state and deeply entrenched. And although the National Executive Committee of the ANC is deeply divided and possibly for the first time is weighted against President Jacob Zuma, he may very well get another reprieve this weekend as the ANC looks to save face and face off on what could be a very challenging secret ballot in Parliament if that secret ballot is given the go-ahead in terms of the vote of no confidence that will happen in Parliament in the next month or two, and then head towards December. To the election of the president of the ANC, who the person there will become the next president of the country. Yeah, big stuff at stake in South Africa right now. An important report. If you haven't read it, you'll find it online. It's important. When you're when you're CIO in a growing corporate, the job you do affects the work of everyone in the company, and their ability to work affects food on plates. But you knew that. MTN knows that between the successes and failures, the courage to continue is what counts. MTN also knows that the food is on other people's plates because your job is to make them able to do theirs. The courage to grow is business. MTN has the advisors, products, and solutions that enable you to do so. Go to mtnbusiness.com/ZA to grow your business today. That brings us to the end of the Money Show. Levuko, well done to you. 2,000 Rand winging its way to you as we speak, figuratively. Because you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz, well done to you. You can brag about it all weekend. Thank you for listening back again on Monday. Can't wait to talk wine with Mr. Wine. I just hope he doesn't whine. Till then, bye-bye.